Good morning, and thank you all for holding. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion, and at that time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. I would like to remind all parties the call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And I would now like to turn the call over to Paul Fulton. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Alon, and thank you all for joining us today for a briefing on CDC's 2019 novel coronavirus response. We are joined today by Dr. Nancy Messonnier, Director of CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Disease. Dr. Messonnier will provide opening remarks before we take questions. I will now turn the call over to Dr. Messonnier.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. I'm joined by Dr. Will Weldon, who is leading our laboratory task force for this response. To date, we have 110 of what we are calling persons under investigation, or PUIs, from 26 states. This is a cumulative number and will only increase. We still only have 5 confirmed positives and 32 that have tested negative. There have been no new confirmed cases overnight. This information will be posted on our website and will be updated on our website on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I want to give a short update of the laboratory side of our work. Last week, we mentioned that CDC has developed a diagnostic test called a real-time reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction. That's a RRT-PCR that can diagnose this new coronavirus in respiratory and serum samples from clinical specimens. Last Friday, we publicly posted the assay protocol for this test. This is essentially a blueprint to make the test. Currently, we are refining the use of this test so that we can provide optimal guidance to states and laboratorians on how to use it. We are working on a plan now so that priority states get these kits as soon as possible. But in the coming weeks, we will share these tests with domestic and international partners so they can test for this virus themselves. Our longer-term plan is to share these tests with domestic and international partners through the agency's International Reagent Resource. Additionally, CDC uploaded the entire genome of the virus from the first and now the second reported cases in the United States to GenBank. All the sequences we've extracted are similar to the one that China initially posted a couple of weeks ago. This means that right now, and based on CDC's analysis of the available data, it doesn't look like the vaccine has mutated. And we are growing the virus in cell culture, which is necessary for further studies, including the additional genetic characterization. Once isolated, the virus will be available in the BEI Resources Repository, which is a NIH resource that supplies organisms and reagents to the broad community of microbiology and infectious disease researchers. As we have said since the beginning, this is a rapidly changing situation, both here and abroad. 16 international locations, including the U.S., have identified cases of this new virus. I'm sure you've seen the reporting and videos coming out of China, in Wuhan particularly. Our thoughts are with the people on the front lines of this emerging public health threat in China. Right now, we are continuing to screen a few passengers from Wuhan at the 5 designated airports. This enhanced entry screening serves 2 purposes. The first is to detect illness and rapidly respond to symptomatic people entering the country. The second purpose is critical, to educate travelers about the symptoms of this new virus and what to do if they develop symptoms. I expect that in the coming days, our travel recommendations will change. I cannot provide details on this yet, but know that we are working on it. Given the aggressive public health response we are pursuing, there may be some disruptions experienced by some. CDC recommends travelers avoid all non-essential travel to Hubei Province. CDC recommends travelers avoid all non-essential travel to Hubei Province, China. As of yesterday, we began recommending people traveling to all other parts of China practice enhanced precautions, including avoiding contact with sick people and discussing travel to China with your healthcare provider, especially if you are an older adult or have underlying health conditions. Returning travelers with symptoms and close contacts of people confirmed with novel coronavirus may be asked to take precautionary measures. We understand that many people in the United States are worried about this virus and how it will affect Americans. Risk depends on exposure. Right now, we have a handful of patients with this new virus here in the United States. However, at this time in the U.S., this virus is not spreading in the community. For that reason, we continue to believe that the immediate health risk from the new virus to the general American public is low at this time. Every day we learn more, and every day we assess to see if our guidance or our response can be improved. As this response evolves, CDC will continue our aggressive public health response strategy, working to protect the health and safety of the American public. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier. We are now ready to take questions.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. One moment, please. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. And our first question today is from Michelle Cortez from Bloomberg News.
Hi, thanks so much for taking the question. I'm wondering if you can give us some details on the screening, the flight screening, now that we're not having flights out of Wuhan directly any longer. If you can tell us how many patients were actually screened or how many travelers were screened, and if there were any detected that way, how many we are following with close contacts and how you think that that's going to change. I know you mentioned that in passing, but I'm wondering if you're going to expand it to all of China or shut it down, or thoughts on that. Thanks.
Sure. So we've screened somewhere around 2,400 people so far, and as you imagine, the number of people who are coming from Wuhan is declining with the aggressive closure of that city. I don't have in front of me sort of daily totals from today or actually even the day before, but those numbers are indeed declining, and we're continuing the same posture at those five airports with the same screening. As we said, two reasons to do the screening. One is to identify ill returning passengers so that they can be identified quickly, treated promptly, and so that we can keep transmission from going farther, and also importantly, education, so that we can educate returning travelers about the signs and symptoms. In terms of people identified through screening, there are a variety of people that are being tracked, and I don't think I'm going to go into more detail, but in terms of our forward-looking stance, as I said, this outbreak is unfolding rapidly, and we are rapidly looking at how that impacts our posture at the border. We are certainly considering broadening of that screening, and that is something that I'll be prepared to speak about as soon as we can make a decision on it.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question is from Dan Vergano from BuzzFeed News.
Hi, thanks very much. I was wondering if you could say something about the disputes over the weekend about the infectiousness of the disease, this R sub-zero factor. Is there, you know, any way that this usually plays out, or is there a stage at which, you know, you can definitively say exactly how infectious this disease is?
I wouldn't say it's a dispute. I would say it's scientists from around the world are looking at the available data and trying to analyze it to come up with information that would be helpful in response. So different scientists are looking at the data slightly differently, and our general interpretation at this point is that the incubation period is somewhere around 2 to 14 days. I do think, again, it's important that this outbreak is really unrolling in front of our eyes, and when will we have a definitive answer? It may not be till farther on into an outbreak. I think there has been some confusion about what this is that the folks are talking about. It's called an R-naught. It's a reproductive number, and it's how many infected people come from a single infected person. Several different modeling groups have looked at it. Most of the articles have had an interpretation that the R-naught is somewhere between 1.5 and 3. That's not really a dramatic difference. As a comparison, the R-naught for measles is somewhere around 12 to 18. That's among the most contagious. In general, you want to get an R naught below 1. That's how you get the disease controlled. I'll stop there.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question is from Eben Brown from Fox News.
Hi, good morning. Could you talk a little bit more about the posting of the protocols for this test? Is this now sort of like an open source kind of test? Are you encouraging as many different health departments around the world to do this, to be able to have their own version of this test, or am I not getting that right? Could you please explain that a bit more and tell me exactly, or to the best you can, how helpful you think it would be to get this test out there as quickly as possible to as many different agencies?
This is Dr. Messini. I'm going to start. I think that's – thank you for allowing us to clarify. We have put that protocol out. It's a blueprint. Dr. Weldon will explain more about what that means. But in general, at this stage of the investigation, we are asking our clinical lab partners to send samples to CDC because we think that's the most efficient way to ensure that the results are as accurate as possible. I would point out that other countries, as far as I know, every other country is doing centralized testing. That is sort of how we typically stand up in this kind of response. Our most important priority is making sure that the test is accurate. Speed is important, but accuracy is probably the priority. Dr. Weldon, do you want to talk more about this?
Yes, so the protocol that was posted online, the intent, as Nancy said, was to use this as a blueprint, and the hope is that researchers will be able to take this protocol and adapt it in their own labs so that they can have this important tool available at their disposal for testing samples from suspected patients. The protocol itself is undergoing rigorous evaluation in our own labs, and kits are being developed that will allow CDC to distribute to state and international labs so that they will have this the important reagents needed for the assay.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And our next question is from Kat Eschner from Popular Science.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. I'm wondering if you can speak to the origins of the virus at all. Two articles out in The Lancet on Friday suggest that it may not have come from the Wuhan seafood market, and I'm wondering, do we know anything more at this time?
Yeah, so I would also put this in the range of really interesting science that's coming out rapidly, and at CDC we're working to synthesize it. There's sort of two different kinds of research that is coming out in this first, I think, seven articles. Some of it is genetic sequencing analysis, which is comparison of the sequencing of the strains from China with other coronaviruses, including animal coronaviruses and SARS and MERS, and then there's certainly epidemiological data. In terms of the genetic sequencing data, it does look like it may be somewhat similar to a bat coronavirus, but I think there's a lot more to be done in terms of both the genetic sequencing as well as the analysis of the epidemiological investigation before we're all going to be confident that we know how this started.
Thank you very much.
To the next question, I do have one more thing that I understand that yesterday the microphone may have not been on when I answered a question, so I'll just for a second make sure I re-answer that. There was a question about the risk of novel coronaviruses from packages or products shipped from China. So there's still a lot unknown about the newly emerged 2019 novel coronavirus and how it spreads. But we know a lot about MERS and SARS, other two coronaviruses that have caused severe infection in people. The novel coronavirus is genetically related more to SARS than MERS, but both are beta coronaviruses, which also have their origins in bats. So while we don't know for sure if this virus will behave exactly the same way as SARS and MERS, we use information from those coronaviruses to guide us. In general, because of the poor survivability of these coronaviruses on surfaces, that's sort of in the range of hours, there is likely a very, very, very low, if any, risk of spread from products or packaging that is shipped over a period of days or weeks at ambient temperatures. So at this time, we can't fully evaluate the risk from different products that are shipped from China under different conditions. But coronaviruses are generally spread most often by respiratory droplets, and there's no evidence to support transmission of this novel coronavirus associated with imported goods. And there certainly have not been any cases in the U.S. associated with imported goods. More information will be posted as it becomes available on our website, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in upcoming media teleconferences.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. And our next question is from Dawn Kopecky from CNBC.
Hi, Dr. Messonnier. Last week you had said that there was no evidence that the coronavirus was infectious during the incubation period, but China's health minister this weekend said that there was evidence that it could be spread during the incubation period when people were asymptomatic. Do you have any additional information on that?
We have certainly seen the reports out of China regarding the spread of the disease. We at CDC don't have any clear evidence of patients being infectious before symptom onset. However, we are being, with our state and local health department partners, very aggressive and very cautious in tracking of close contacts to determine if we are able to identify any close contacts who indeed are ill. So far, we have not seen any human-to-human transmission in the United States, but we'll certainly update you as more information becomes available from the U.S. as well as from other countries.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Melissa Jenko from AAP News.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. I just wondered if you could tell us if this virus has had, what kind of impact it's had on children, both in the U.S. and what you know of the global cases.
So far, most of the information coming out from China, which is certainly where the majority of cases are, is that the disease is by far majorly in adults, with older adults and those with underlying illnesses at higher risk. In the United States, the five cases are all in adults. There are a few reports of disease in children, and we'll wait to learn more as more information becomes available. In the U.S., as you can imagine, we're also taking a cautious approach, and certainly we'll be very cautious about making sure that if there are children who are PUIs, they are treated appropriately, and that we're closely monitoring any close contacts of cases who happen to be children.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mike Stobie from the Associated Press.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. Doctor, could you say a little bit more about, you said there are 110 people in the U.S. are being monitored. The samples have been taken from each of them and you're awaiting results. Could you be more specific about what's going on in the evaluation of those 110? Could you also say when those test kits are expected to be sent out? And also, I'm sorry, you kind of alluded to a decision that I guess CDC is discussing about whether to change its travel recommendations. Is there anything else you can say? Are you thinking of doing screening for all Chinese passengers? You kind of dangled something big out there in front of us, and we're all kind of wondering what you're referring to. Thank you.
Sure. So let me take those in order. In terms of the PUIs, the process is like this. We identify somebody who potentially has exposure to Wuhan and has a fever and a respiratory illness. We would also consider a PUI to be somebody who had contact with a confirmed case and had fever and a respiratory illness. Those patients are coming to attention in a variety of formats. As you know, some of these patients presented themselves to their healthcare provider. Others are being detected through vigilance at the health department, at the airport, and through healthcare providers. So when those patients are identified, the procedure is that the health department gets called first. The health department calls CDC. We have folks here on site 24/7 through our Emergency Operations Center. The CDC SMEs who take that call discuss the case with the health department and the clinician, and based on the discussion, decide whether that patient merits additional laboratory diagnostics. Specimens are taken, and they are sent to CDC where they're tested. The time lag between the decision that a patient needs further laboratory testing and a result is somewhere around a day, depending on geographically where that patient is being seen and how we can most efficiently ship it. But that number of POIs is that general number. And as you say, as we'll be working our way through the ones that require additional laboratory testing, and you'll rapidly see patients identified as either being confirmed cases or hopefully ruled out as being a confirmed case. In terms of the lab kits, what I would say is that we are working as fast as we can, and I'm going to say 1 to 2 weeks. We're doing everything we can to make it as fast as possible. We understand that for patients, clinicians, and health departments, it is much preferable to have that kit as close as possible to the patients geographically so that we can efficiently provide a result, but it's going to be another week or two. And in terms of the last thing, what I can say is that we're imminently thinking about this decision. As you all know, there is lots of new information coming out of China in terms of cases, in terms of what's going on there outside of Wuhan, the other provinces, the case numbers, and we're trying to take that all into account as we move quickly as we can towards any decisions. I expect there will be a decision and an announcement about that within the next day, but I can't give you a time because we want to make sure that we're being expedient and sensible about what kind of decisions and recommendations we're making.
I think we have time for two more questions. Elon, next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lisa Colangelo from Newsday.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to make sure I understood the 110 persons under investigation. They were either themselves traveling in China in Wuhan or they had contact with somebody who had recently traveled. Is that correct?
Generally, the majority of them, yes. As I said before, we have a general guideline. However, because there is so much unknown, we are being cautious about testing and being responsive to concerns of the clinicians and the health department. So the decision about whether that patient gets tested is a joint decision between the clinician, the health department, and CDC. So in general, that is the correct definition, but around the edges there may be some additional testing, and know that this issue also, what we consider a PUI, is something that we're in active discussions about with our state and local partners. In the definitioning of the PUI, also know that while that number is 110, we are certainly prioritizing based on patients that we based on PUIs that might be at higher risk. For example, in general, somebody who is a very close contact of a confirmed case and has respiratory symptoms might be a higher priority than somebody who has a mild cough and traveled to Wuhan 2 weeks ago. By the way, those are not real examples, but just know that within that 110, we also are prioritizing based on risk.
And just one quick follow. It's 26 states. At some point, are you going to release which states those are?
As you know, we are incredibly sensitive about releasing the names of states in this kind of context. So that would really be up to a state health department and a state legislature whether they want to make that release. So what I would say is if you want to know whether there are any PUIs in your state, please contact the state health department and let them make the decision about whether they want to release that number or not.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Last question, please.
And our final question today is from Ronnie Rabin from New York Times.
A couple things. I just want to get more clarity on the flights from Wuhan. I thought they weren't flights from Wuhan. So are you screening people who came from another city via Wuhan, and are you able to get that information, or do they present themselves at the airports? I'm not sure I understand how that's happening unless there are flights coming from
Thanks for letting me clarify this. You are
and I just also want to ask one more thing while I have it. I mean, are you asking people to present themselves to come in for testing if they have been to Wuhan? I mean, 110 out of, I mean, we know there are so many people here who have traveled recently from China. That seems a very small number, and we do seem to think they can be asymptomatic and not necessarily older and with underlying conditions. According to the Lancet piece, So I'm just a little confused about, is there a scarcity of the testing? Is there a scarcity of the testing?
There's no scarcity of testing, and I'm sorry if you could let me respond now.
Sure.
Thanks. So, again, as I said, flights from Wuhan, direct flights, have certainly been stopped, but there are a variety of people who are on what's called broken itineraries, so folks that have longer itineraries who may be transiting from Wuhan through another country back to the United States, and there are still individuals who are in the middle of one of those itineraries. And when I talk about screening passengers returning from Wuhan, I'm talking about those people, and we continue to identify some. As I said earlier, I don't have the numbers from the past day, but we are still gathering those people, and they are still part of the same screening. In terms of the message to travelers, our focus is on returning travelers from Wuhan who have respiratory symptoms and fever. This has been something that we've been trying to make sure we're being very clear about to returning travelers. And one of the things that's really important about the screening at the airport is that we're not just identifying people who are sick. We're passing out those messages so that people who return from Wuhan who might have come back a week ago, for example, if they have today a fever and respiratory infections, my message to them is please call your healthcare provider. It's really important that you get analyzed and you may need to be tested. As many of you know, several of the confirmed patients in the United States were asymptomatic when they came back, developed symptoms later, and I want to compliment them because they were prompt in calling their own healthcare provider and identifying themselves as having traveled to Wuhan. Patients who are returning are an important part of this equation, and I'm sorry I misspoke. It's travelers from Hubei, not just from Wuhan. But if you recently returned from Hubei and you have a fever and respiratory symptoms, please call your healthcare provider so that you can be appropriately checked out, and we want to make sure that you get the best care possible.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier, and thank you all for joining us today for this briefing. Please remember to visit the 2019 Novel Coronavirus webpage for continued updates. If you have further questions, please call the CDC Media Line at 404-639-3286 or email media@cdc.gov.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.